Well, thank you so very much. Really appreciate so much your coming and staying through the day with us. It was in 1838 when Abraham Lincoln addressed the Lyceum in Springfield, Illinois. And this is what he said. At what point should we expect the approach of danger? By what means should we fortify ourselves against it? Should we expect some transatlantic giant to step the ocean and crush us with a blow? Never. All the armies of Europe and Asia and Africa combined could never, by force, take a drink from the Ohio or make a mark on the Blue Ridge, not in the trial of 1,000 years. Then at what point should we expect the approach of danger? And I answer, if it ever reaches from the spring up among us, it can never come from abroad. If destruction be our lot, we ourselves must be its authors and its finishers. As a nation of free men, we shall live through all time or die by suicide. As a nation of free men, we shall live through all time or die by suicide. And I would like to suggest, in many respects, we are dying by suicide today. Only most people have no idea what is really taking place. Well, this afternoon I want to convince you of three things. Number one, the mass media in America is controlled, and they control what you hear, what you see, what you read, and ultimately what you believe. Two, you and your family and your children are in grave danger. And three, there is an organized effort to destroy what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave. And if we can expose that effort, why, we can preserve this nation for generations yet unborn. Elie Wiesel, or Wiesel, wrote a book. He actually eventually got a Pulitzer Prize, but his book was entitled One Generation After 1970, and this is what he wrote. Spring, 1945. Emerging from the nightmare, the world discovered the camps, the death factories, the senseless horror, the total displacement, the absolute reign of evil. There was then a technique, a science of murder, complete with scientific laboratories, complete with business meetings and progress charts. The men who were involved in this process were not necessarily from the gutter society of misfits, or they were people, well, they were, many of them held degrees. They held degrees in philosophy and biology and sociology and general medicine and psychiatry, in the fine arts. There were lawyers among them, and unbelievable but true, theologians and aristocrats. And of course, Elie Wiesel asked the question, how could this have come about? You know, when we think back to what happened in Germany, why, we hear a lot of arguments about the Holocaust. Did it really occur? Perhaps it didn't occur. And we argue the wrong point because they do this intentionally to confuse us so we really can't see the smoke from the trees. And so it is that if we look at what really happened in Germany during the Second World War, we find that they systematically exterminated about 100,000 people who were mentally handicapped. They sterilized 700,000 people who were physically handicapped. According to Norman Cohn in his classic work, Professor Norman Cohn, A War for Genocide, they killed 6 million Jews, but they also killed 12 million others. Now, everybody has heard, every literate person in this room, in our country, has heard of the 6 million Jews, but why have we never heard of the 12 million others? Certainly, those of you who read Corrie Ten Boom's book, The Hiding Place, will remember that she and her sister and her father were taken to a concentration camp because they were hiding Jews in their home, and of course they were all to be exterminated for some strange reason. Right, choose to prefer to believe that it was God's hand. She was spared and the others were killed. Now, why was Adolf Hitler killing Christians? In fact, most of the people who were exterminated in those camps, other than the Jews, were Christians, because Germany at that time was a strongly Christian nation. It's no longer a strongly Christian nation, but in those days it was. How could it be that anything this horrendous, we would never hear about the 12 million others? Does that bother you? There were many other things that happened at that time. There was something known as Operation Keelhaul. Immediately after the Second World War, there were Russians who had either gone over to the Nazis because they hated communists, or they had certainly been captured by the Nazis, but some of them were living in the United States in camps, or in Canada, or in England, or in Europe. They were all in camps. And they were systematically rounded up by the American government, and the Canadian government, and the British government, and the European France, and they were sent back to Russia to be killed. It was known as Operation Keelhaul. Now, the figure is 6 million. You'll go up on the internet, you'll see some references to 2.7 million, but the best source of information is a book called Secret Betrayal, written by Tolstoy, who was the famous author's nephew. But his book, Secret Betrayal, documents about, I think it was pretty close to 6 million, were rounded up and sent back to be killed. How could you conceal something like that in America? Unless there is a degree of control over what the American people think. And there's a book that all of you need to get. We carry it. It's called The New Media Monopoly. It's written by Ben Bagdakian, who was formerly the dean of the School of Journalism in Berkeley. And he started analyzing the control of the American media back in 1983. At that time, there were 50 major corporations that controlled the American media. By 1989, there were 29 major corporations. By the year 2000, the sixth edition of his book came out, The Media Monopoly. At that time, there were six major corporations that dominated the American media. The latest edition has been renamed. It's called The New Media Monopoly. Five major corporations dominate the media in America today. Now, the conservatives are told, oh, the media is liberal because the reporters are liberal. The liberals are told, oh, the media is conservative because the big corporations own the media. And, of course, neither side is correct, and both sides is partly correct. But there is an X factor out there that nobody wants to talk about. The book, The New Media Monopoly by Ben Bagdakian. We should have copies of that here, and if we don't, we can get them for you. And the fact that nobody's telling you this is simply a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. We mentioned Operation Keelhaul. There was another operation immediately after the war. It was known as Operation Paperclip. It was a CIA operation, the CIA OSS operation, which was coordinated with the U.S. Army. There was a law passed that no Nazi would be allowed to come to America. However, they decided they were going to bring the Nazis to the United States, about 1,000 of them, to continue their bizarre experiments in biological warfare, their bizarre experiments in mind control, and of course to put America ahead in this race for space. That's where Wernher von Braun came from, who was the head of the American Space Organization. He himself had been a Nazi. The American Space Institute is named for General Strokold, who was a Nazi, one of the cruelest ones, responsible for the murder of tens of thousands of Jews. You never hear about that. We cover that in a book we have here called Operation Bluebird. But there were about 1,000 Nazis who were brought to the United States under Operation Paperclip. It was assumed that if you didn't look inside the file, you wouldn't know there were Nazis, so you could agree to let them come, so they'd put a paperclip on the file. And that's how they were allowed to come to America. The book is the story is covered in a fascinating book entitled Secret Agenda by Linda Hunt. To try to get a copy up on the internet. They cost about $150 each, but we do have a 4-tape set on Operation Paperclip. We put together with my interviews with Linda Hunt, the author of Operation Bluebird, and then a man who talks about the rat line. Now, I don't know how many of you know what the rat line is, but the rat line was what happened after the Second World War when the CIA and British intelligence and certain elements working within the Vatican, not necessarily the upper echelon, but certain operations, a dark cell within the Vatican, helped 10,000 Nazis escape to South America. You know the names of Klaus Barbie and Eichmann, Mengele, Bormann. They all went to South America. 10,000 of them did. We have a video, And we probably will be using it. It's a documentary put together by, of all people, Sam Donaldson, who actually tracked the whole story down, and he went into Argentina and Brazil and Paraguay while these Nazis were living in the early 1990s. None of them were still alive. Only two of them were ever taken back to be trial. That was Eichmann and Klaus Barbie. The rest of them were allowed to live there under the auspices of your government. They knew that, and they allowed them to escape, and the question is why? It really doesn't make sense. Weren't the Nazis evil? Weren't they the enemy? Hadn't they committed these terrible atrocities? And they had, but so why did the CIA and the OSS and British intelligence help them to escape to South America, 10,000 of them? And how is it that the average American has never heard this? I could suggest you get our four tape set, Operation Paperclip. We mentioned Operation Keelhaul. One reason we've never heard of Operation Keelhaul, the sending of the Russians back, is because they've censored that in the United States, but we do have a video. It was shown only one time in the United States. It was a BBC production. Somebody took a copy of it, and we've actually a third and fourth generation copy of it. We do offer that. And you'll see the British officers weeping as they remembered what they'd done, sending those people back to be slaughtered. And the fact is you've never heard of it. Again, reflects the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. So how do we make any sense out of the things that I've told you? Well, Rudolf Hess, who was the Reichsfuhrer before he flew to Great Britain, right? Rudolf Hess said that National Socialism is nothing more than applied biology. National Socialism is nothing more than applied biology. It was simply eugenics. It was the application of science to social problems. And, of course, you can only understand this by understanding that David Rockefeller, coming back from communist China in August of 1973. Now, by that time, the Chinese had exterminated between 80 and 100 million people. The figures that are ordinarily given for executions in China consolidating power were 40 to 80 million. But most people have never heard of the Great Hunger. This went on from 1958 to 1962. There's a book we call, it's not available, I have copies in my library, called Hungry Ghosts. Between 1958 and 1962, they consolidating power, they starved to death between 30 and 40 million Chinese. Now, I got started in this battle back in 1962, but none of the conservative organizations ever talked about that. How could you kill 30 to 40 million people between 1958 and 1962 and nobody ever heard about it? Like it never happened? I know Stephen Moser, who heads the Population Control Research Organization. I consider him a friend, and he had actually been in China in about 1978. He got an opportunity. He was actually the man who came out and talked about how the one China policy, one child policy in China allowed them to actually kill girl children. It was all right to kill a child if it was a girl, so that you could have only one child. It would be a boy. And when he came back to Stanford after living in China for several years, and announced this, instead of being incensed at this brutality in communist China, why they were incensed with Stephen Moser, and he lost his position, he lost his backing, he was never given his doctorate degree in blackball, so he could never get a job at any other university in the United States. You see, that's the price of telling the truth. But he's talked to me, and I've had him on my program. He uses the figure, as I recall, 40 million that were starved. The book, The Hungry Ghost, uses the figure 30 million. 30 million, 40 million, they're just figures. And yet, even one of them is a unique individual made in the image and likeness of God. Well, David Rockefeller came to the United States after a tour of China. And in August 10th of 1973, he wrote an editorial that was published in the New York Times. You have to understand that David Rockefeller was one of the men who rules the world. And he had traveled throughout China, and he came back and said this: the social experiment in China under the leadership of Chairman Mao is among the most important and successful in history. The social experiment in China under the leadership of Chairman Mao is among the most important and successful in history. How could you look upon what has happened in China as a social experiment? Well, you must understand there are people who look at the world differently than you and I do. And as Elie Wiesel had written in Germany, there was a technique, a science of murder. And they had scientific laboratories. They had progress charts. They had business meetings. And this is how they determined how successful they were in the great scientific experiment that was carried out in Germany under the Nazi regime. Now, are there other scientific experiments going on in the world today? Well, of course, the Russians killed about 60 million people in the Gulag, according to Solzhenitsyn. That's the figure he used in his article writing in Foreign Affairs magazine. How many of you have seen motion pictures about the Holocaust and the 6 million Jews who were killed? How many of you have seen motion pictures about the 60 million people who were slaughtered in the Gulag? You're not going to hear about it. Why? Because our reality is shaped by those people who control the media in America. But one of the significant things is that the Russians carried out all sorts of experiments on the people living in the Gulag. One of them, of course, was to fluoridate the water. Why? If you fluoridate the water, why people are not as aggressive as they ordinarily would be. In fact, what is the active ingredient in Prozac that is so widely distributed in America today? Why, it's a fluoride compound. But you see, most Americans don't know that. And now today, in Russia, while the population is shrinking, in fact, the average Russian male lives 58 years of age. And they will tell you, oh, he's dying because he drinks so much vodka. That's the reason he's dying so young. But are there other possible causes of the rather rapid drop in age in Russia today? In China, of course, there have been a number of strange things that have happened. As you know, the International Planned Parenthood, financed largely by the United States, brought about the one-child policy in China, which was really very successful. And then, of course, we also have an AIDS epidemic in China. We'll talk a little bit more about the AIDS epidemic throughout the world, but it's interesting how it got introduced into China. Now, you have to understand that China is a totalitarian state. You do not do anything in China without the permission of the state. So they sent out people to collect blood, and this was the idea. They were going to get plasma and cells to be able to utilize in the hospital. So you can actually take blood, you centrifuge it, you get the red cells in one unit, you get the plasma, the white cells, the fibrinogen, and all the other products in the other, and those can be used for medicinal purposes. So they went out into the hinterlands, and people who live in abject poverty, and they would pay them maybe $5 to give a pint of blood. And they would extract then all of the important elements, the plasma and the cells and the fibrinogen, and then they would pool the red cells with other people's red cells and then give it back to the individual. Now, that's madness. Why would you do anything like that? First of all, because you have different red blood cell types. Maybe they did type it. We don't know what they did. But they talked about pooling the blood and giving it back to the people. And in those areas where they did it, why, they developed a major AIDS epidemic in certain of the Chinese provinces. Henan, as I remember, was one of the major ones. And they admit now to having 80, 100,000 AIDS cases. Some people say it's really up to a million AIDS cases. Nobody in China really wants to talk about it. One of the AIDS activists there really recently was complaining about the way the government was handling it, and he was immediately arrested and hustled off to a concentration camp. Recently, there was an article in the San Jose Mercury, and it talked about the fact that foreign youth that came to America from Latin America, once they got to America, their health began to degenerate. They would begin to put on weight. They would begin to develop asthma. They were much less healthy in many respects than they were when they were living south of the border. Within the last week, an article in the San Jose Mercury pointing out that one of the experts on population had said that the American age is going to fall. In other words, the average American male lives to about 76 years of age. But this man is an expert on demographics, says he anticipates that we've gotten all the maximum longevity we can, and that now the average age at death for an American male is going to begin to fall. And there were other experts who began to question that. They thought it was foolish. Maybe it'll stabilize and we won't live longer, but certainly not going to fall. But this man said, oh yes, the average age is going to fall. And the question is, what does he know? Are we following the same pattern that's going on in Russia today? Are there things that the average American has no idea that are going to influence your health and the health of your family and the health of your children? Let me take you back to 1826. There was a man named Thomas Malthus. He was an Anglican minister, but he went to work for the British East India Company. He wrote extensively about the fact that at the time, now remember, he's writing in 1826, but he's very worried about the population explosion at that time, about the fact that people are not dying as readily as they had in the past, and he feared that there would be too many people in the world. So this is what Thomas Malthus wrote in his essay on the Principles of Population, the sixth edition in 1826. All children born beyond what would be required to keep up the population must necessarily perish unless room be made for them by the deaths of grown persons. We should facilitate instead of foolishly and vainly endeavoring to impede the operation of nature in producing this mortality. And if we dread the too frequent visitation of the horrid form of famine, we should sedulously encourage the other forms of destruction which we compel nature to use. Instead of recommending cleanliness to the poor, we should encourage contrary habits. In our towns, we should make streets narrower, crowd more people into the houses, and court the return of the plague. In the country, we should build our villages near stagnant pools and particularly encourage settlements in all marshy and unwholesome situations. But above all, we should reprobate specific ravaging diseases and those benevolent but much mistaken men who thought they were doing a service to mankind by projecting schemes for the total extirpation of particular disorders. What we were advocating was creating diseases and plagues. Now, you can find this on the internet. You look up Thomas Malthus, and there are actually areas that you can actually find this, and we will be actually putting this into a syllabus. Syllabus we're going to be putting together in the very near future. Malthus died about 1833, but 4 years before he published his article in 1826, a man named Sir Francis Galton was born. Galton lived from 1822 until 1911. And Sir Francis Galton became the father of eugenics. And he really believed that Malthus was absolutely right. There were too many people in the world. What we needed was eugenics. What we needed was scientific breeding. What we needed to treat people simply as, well, not as human beings, but as objects like animals, and they would be bred specifically for specific purposes. His ideas then were picked up here in the United States by a woman named Margaret Sanger, who was born in 1879 and lived until 1966. And Margaret Sanger believed in scientific breeding. We should breed people like racehorses. She believed in abortion. Of course, it wasn't allowed during her era, but she set up abortion clinics predominantly in the black area. She targeted the blacks for elimination. She only wanted, of course, the elite, the people of superior mentality to breed. She liked the white Anglo-Saxon. This was her idea, the ideal individual. And of course, that's really so interesting. I was reading an article the other day in the New York Times about how in Denmark, in Copenhagen, young, blonde-haired, blue-eyed Nordic men go into sperm banks and deposit their sperm, and it's actually being shipped all over the world to be used to impregnate women because their husbands are incapable of impregnating them. About a quarter of couples in the United States are having difficulty getting pregnant. Why is that? It never was like this before, but some of these things are changing in America. And so what they're doing, of course, is the offspring will be blonde-haired, blue-eyed children. And all throughout the world, this is being used to repopulate the world with a new breed, as it were, almost the breed that Margaret Sanger talked about. Well, of course, then there was a man named Ernst Rudin, who was a disciple of Margaret Sanger. She wrote in her birth control publications. And Ernst Rudin, of course, worked for the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute in Berlin. And his ideas, of course, then were incorporated into the Nazi movement. This idea of the Nazism, the National Socialism, of being nothing more than applied science. Second World War came. Before that, of course, there was a man named George Bernard Shaw. He's been lauded and applauded as one of the great thinkers of all time. But in 1929, he wrote a book. It was called The Intelligent Woman's Guide to Socialism and Capitalism. And we have all of these books in our library. If you want the exact pages, we can get them for you. And this is what he wrote in his book, in the last page of the book in the appendix. I also made it clear that socialism means equality of income or nothing. And then under socialism, you would not be allowed to be poor. You would be forcibly fed, clothed, lodged, taught, and employed, whether you liked it or not. And if it were discovered that you had not character and industry enough to be worth all of this trouble, you might possibly be put to death in a kindly manner. But whilst you were permitted to live, you would have to live well. George Bernard Shaw, that great humanitarian. And then, of course, following the Second World War, Bertrand Russell. You must understand that both George Bernard Shaw and Bertrand Russell were part of the Fabian Socialist Movement, which is one of the secret societies that moves behind the scenes. I have gotten their material for many, many years, and of course Tony Blair, who is currently the Prime Minister of England, was formerly the director of the British Fabian Socialist Movement. But Bertrand Russell wrote this in his book, The Impact of Science on Society, 1953. The Nazis were more scientific than the present rulers of Russia and were more inclined towards the sort of atrocities that I have in mind. They were said to use prisoners in concentration camps as material for all kinds of experiments, some involving death after much pain. But if the Nazis had survived, they would probably have soon taken to scientific breeding. Any nation which adopts this practice will, within a generation, secure great military advantages. The system will be something like this, except possibly for the governing aristocracy. All but 5% of the males and 30% of the females will be sterilized. In order to secure adequate cannon fodder, as a rule, artificial insemination will be preferred to the natural method. Gradually, by selective breeding, the congenital differences between rulers and ruled will increase until they become almost different species. Now, how would you go about sterilizing the men in the United States? Well, there are an awful lot of men, of course, who got talked into having their vas deferens tied so that their tubes were tied so they couldn't have children. There are a lot of men who did this voluntarily. They wanted to be promiscuous, but a lot of women, of course, had their tubes tied. An awful lot of women would go into the doctor, and the first thing they would say, well, you got a problem, well, let's do a hysterectomy. That's the easy way out of it. But, of course, to sterilize large numbers of men in the United States would be a very difficult thing. Indira Gandhi tried to do this in India, where they rounded up men and brought them in and had them sterilized. And of course, that was the result of that was she lost the election. And they've done this in other areas throughout the world. For instance, they'll often put a well into a town or into a village, a very, very poor. We'll put a well in, but all the men have to be sterilized. Women, of course, going in for a pregnancy, very often they would have an IUD placed in them. Sometimes they'd have their tubes tied without their knowledge at all. Policies that the Americans financed throughout the world for population control have been totally brutal. Your tax money, but of course you're never told that. But how would they accomplish this in America? How would they sterilize large numbers of men in the United States? Bertrand Russell then went on to write, and I'm quoting now from page 103 of his book, The Impact of Science on Society. I don't pretend that birth control is the only way in which populations can be kept from increasing. War has hitherto been disappointing in this respect, but perhaps bacteriological war may prove more effective. If a black death could be spread throughout the world once in every generation, survivors could procreate freely without making the world too full. The state of affairs might be somewhat unpleasant, but what of that? Really high-minded people are indifferent to happiness, especially other people's. Incidentally, I hope all of you have the summary that's in your packet that we passed out, a summary of everything we're saying here, and there's a place there for you to take notes on it. There was, of course, the book I've just described was written in 1953. 4 years later, a man named Dr. Clymer wrote a book called The Age of Treason. And of course, in that book, he talked about how Adolf Hitler And the Soviets had fluoridated the water in their respect. Hitler fluoridated the water in the countries they occupied. Why? To keep the people in line. And of course, they were doing that in the Gulag in Russia. But nobody ever talks about that today. And anybody who mentions anything like that is why he's, of course, supposed to be some sort of a kook who believes there's a communist under every bed. But we have Dr. Clymer's book written in 1957. It was 2 years later. In May of 1969, I'm sorry, it was 12 years later in May of 1969, when Dr. Richard Dane, who was the medical director of Planned Parenthood, addressed a group of doctors in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Now, the documentation of this is contained in a 4-tape set we have called The New Order of the Barbarians, and you can get with that actually a transcript of the talk. This is not Dr. Dane's talk, but it is the description of the talk by Dr. Dunnigan, who was a young pediatrician at the time in 1969. I've interviewed Dr. Dunnigan. I believe he's honest and he's telling the truth. Three of the interviews were done by somebody named Randy Engel, and we got her permission to simply copy those tapes. But Dr. Day, according to Dr. Dunnigan, had told the doctors to not to take notes, to turn off the recorders, and he was going to tell them what the future was. And he said there really is an organization that's known as the Order, and they control everything in this country, and it's too late to stop what they plan. There are too many people in the world, and so we're going to have to create new diseases to eliminate large numbers of people. We're going to, of course, conceal the treatments for cancer. We're going to create all sorts of new diseases. We're going, of course, to build Japanese cars better than American cars to begin to shift the power structure to Japan from America. We're going, of course, to encourage women in athletics because, of course, women, when they're involved in athletics, aren't going to be so interested in having children. And he talked about all sorts of things that would be used to control and manipulate the population. But most people, of course, never heard of this talk. It was actually a little over 2 months later where we do have the documentation on this, and you'll find it in the handout I gave you. When Dr. MacArthur, on July 1st, 1969, appeared before the Defense Appropriations Committee of the House of Representatives, was asking for money for the military, and this is what he said. Within the next 5 to 10 years, it would probably be possible to make a new infective microorganism which could differ in certain important aspects from any known disease-causing organism. Most important of these is that it might be refractory to the immunological and therapeutic process upon which we depend to maintain our relative freedom from infectious disease. It is a highly controversial issue. There are many who believe such research should not be undertaken, lest it lead to yet another method of massive killing of large populations. That was July 1st, 1969. In 1976, the first cases of a new disease were identified. Nobody knew what it was. It didn't have a name. It wasn't until June of 1981, or when it was described in 5 cases of homosexuals, all with this suppressed immune system disease, pneumocystis pneumonia, was called GRID. It was a gay-related immune deficiency disease. It was later called AIDS. Now, in the family planning perspective, which is published right in Santa Cruz, where we live, it's a subdivision of Planned Parenthood. In fact, Santa Cruz, where we live, is one of the centers of this whole world occult movement, believe it or not. And in this publication, they have page 9, and the table 1, they have a table there, and they basically talk about how they're going to control the population. Because that has always been Planned Parenthood's objective, that was Margaret Sanger's objective, and that, of course, was the objective of Planned Parenthood in October of 1970. It is their objective today. What did they propose? Well, in the table 1, they said we should restructure the family, we should encourage homosexuality. We should educate for family limitation. We should put fertility control agents in the water. We should put fertility control agents in the water. We should encourage women to work, tax married more than single. You've heard of the marriage tax. Do you ever wonder why we tax married couples more than if they weren't married? Well, of course, because we don't want you to get married. Live together in sin, that's all right, but don't have any children. Create chronic depression. Contraceptives is to be distributed non-medically. And we have copies of all of these things. They will be in the syllabus we'll be putting together very soon. March 20th, 1980, in Elberton, Georgia, just on the west side of the border between South Carolina and Georgia, they're dedicated the Georgia Guidestones. And those of you who've seen our sustainable development syllabus, you don't have to buy it if you don't want to. You can just look at the first two pages. We have pictures of the Georgia Guidestones, these gigantic slabs of granite, where in eight different languages are recorded the secret message from the dark side. Now, nobody knows who put up the money. Whoever put up the money for it is a secret. The man said his name was R.C. Christian, but of course that wasn't his real name. He came into Elberton one day. He wanted to build this monument as a message to mankind. He said he represented a secret group, but nobody knows who the secret group is. Nobody knows who R.C. Christian is. The only man who knew was the bank president, and he's sworn to secrecy. So why the secret? Well, because there are 10 commandments from the dark side. And number one is maintain the world population of 500 million in constant balance with nature. Maintain the world population at 500 million in constant balance with nature. If you read that, it doesn't look so bad unless you realize we've got over 6 billion people. So they're talking about killing off over 90% of the world's population. They know what they're doing. They don't want you to know what they're doing. And then, of course, I've included in your handout quotations from Jacques Cousteau, that great humanitarian. You remember, he used to swim with the dolphins. And he was, of course, quoted in the UNESCO Courier, November 1991. You'll see the front page. You'll see his quotation. It's a terrible thing to have to say this, but world population must be stabilized. And to do this, we must eliminate 350,000 people a day. This is a horrible, this is too horrible to consider that we should have to, we shouldn't even have to say it. But they really do intend to kill off 350,000 people a day. Now, you know, could you imagine if George Bush had said something like that? You can imagine what would happen. But of course, when Jacques Cousteau, who puts Adolf Hitler really to shame, I mean, Adolf Hitler only killed 6 million Jews, you know, and 12 million others, but of course, imagine killing 350,000 people a day. How many could you kill in a year? And yet not a word in the general media. Blacked out as if it had never occurred. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I want to go into the fact that America is under attack today. We're under attack from many different points, and I've simply listed them here. Aspartame, and we'll talk in a great deal of detail about aspartame. Of course, this is NutraSweet. You find it in just about in most of the prepared products you're going to be buying. You find it in your Diet Coke. You find it in your Pepsi and in the Coca-Cola. And you find it in, I even found it in my yogurt the other day. You've got to start looking at the labels. You find it in gum. You find it in Smucker's products. Aspartame is almost in so many things, prepared things you're going to be buying. AIDS. Where did AIDS come from? I always used to be asked, where did AIDS come from? And I'd always say, well, you're asking the wrong question. The question is not where did AIDS come from, but why aren't we trying to stop the spread of the disease? And those of you who haven't read my book, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, should read it. I wrote it before I'd contemplated the full impact of the AIDS epidemic. What I wrote is absolutely true. It's the best book on the politics of AIDS. We are not trying to stop the spread of AIDS. So we should be asking both questions. Where did AIDS come from? Why did it suddenly appear just out of nowhere? And it is not one disease. There are 8 different types of AIDS, 8 different species all across the world. There's an HIV-1, there's an HIV-2. Under HIV-1, there's a type M and O. Under M, there's a type A, subtype B, subtype C, subtype D, subtype E, and subtype F. And you find an entirely different subtype in Thailand than you find in Africa, where you find A and C, and then you find in the United States, where you find subtype B. So where do they all come from spontaneously, all exactly at the same time? Well, I'm reading a book by Dr. Gary Glom, I believe is his name. He says that a man had come to him. He was dying. And he said, I was part of the scientific unit that created the AIDS virus. Now, the author of the book doesn't give his name, but then he develops this whole idea. But this man who was dying of incurable cancer said, "I was part of the group." Sounds pretty far out. Could that sort of thing happen? I mean, could people really create deadly new diseases to kill? Mass means of killing? A frequent guest on my program, they asked me off the stage who it was, I'll tell you. But he has told me, and he is one of the world's leading scientists who we're privileged to have as a frequent guest on Radio Liberty, that men have come to him who were part of the unit that created the AIDS virus. And they're afraid to come forward, quite afraid for their lives. And they said, we had no idea what we were doing. This was just an experiment. The CIA put something together called the Special Virus Cancer Virus Project, or the Special Virus Cancer Project. And, of course, this was started back about 1953. It was to create new diseases. They ordered all of the copies of their records shredded, but fortunately, they didn't do a very good job. We have several of them. They hired literally thousands of scientists to learn how to create new diseases. And they did learn how to create new diseases that would destroy the immune system. And it's all there in, we have Project 8, Project 9. We have these rather extensive descriptions put out by the CIA-funded organization to find new methods of mass killing. And as you go up on the internet, look up Lloyd Graves' website. He's got a great deal of information. If you haven't read Len Horwich's book, Emerging Viruses, AIDS and Ebola, you need to get it. You need to read it. Here in the United States, they had an experimental hepatitis vaccine. It was offered only to promiscuous homosexuals. Of the promiscuous homosexuals in San Francisco who took this experimental hepatitis vaccine, 75% contracted AIDS and died. Well, most of them are dead by now. And, of course, it was also used in Africa in just exactly the areas where the AIDS epidemic arose, because AIDS is not universally seen throughout Africa. It's only seen in certain specific areas. As you go to the west coast of Africa, you almost never see it. You only see it on the eastern part of Africa, in those areas where the special vaccine was used. And even more than that, of course, there's a man named Dr. Gisselquist, who we have interviewed. And Dr. Gisselquist is a scientist, and he had reviewed all the papers on AIDS in Africa. And, of course, we're always told, how is AIDS spread? Sex, IV, drugs, transfusions. But he pointed out that one study had showed that children, HIV-infected children, that they checked for mothers, 40% of them were not HIV positive. So how did the kids get it? They didn't get it by sex, that's for sure. It's his contention they might have gotten it from dirty needles. Or perhaps it was something in the vaccines that they were being given. We don't know, and certainly nobody is going to, of course, do an analysis of that. Anthrax vaccine is being given to our military, although many of the people are complaining about it, many of them becoming intensely ill. But it's a court martial offense to refuse to take the anthrax vaccine. I did an interview, this is last week, with a former doctor from the Soviet Union, trained at the Military Institute in Leningrad. And I asked him, of course, he had been inoculated for anthrax. I said, well, but don't they have lots of other types of subtypes of anthrax? You could only be immunized for certain types, and there are a whole flock of different types of anthrax. Oh, he said, that's right. And, of course, if you have a different type of anthrax, why, it wouldn't do any good. They were immunizing for the type of anthrax that they were working with. So why are we immunizing our entire military? The only reason you would do that is if you knew the type that your enemy was going to use. How would you know the type your enemy was going to use? The only other thing would be if you were planning on using it yourself. The only way you would know. Hepatitis B. Hepatitis B, of course, newborn child for many years in the United States, in the nursery, on the first day of birth, was given a hepatitis B vaccine with a full dose, toxic dose of thimerosal to affect their minds. And, of course, if you study, as Bill Sardi had pointed out so well, the explosion of the incidence of autism from 1 in 10,000 to about 1 in 150, and since it's predominantly in males, probably about 1 in 50 children now has male children now has autism. And, of course, we know that the thimerosal destroys the mind of children. How do we know that? Well, because the Dr. Geyer, we've had him as a guest on our program many times, Mark and David Geyer, got into the CDC databank as researchers. They let them see if they had two groups of children. One, of course, were children who got DPT immunizations with thimerosal, and another got it without. And, of course, the ones that got with the thimerosal were 2 to 6 times more common autism. And so what did the CDC do when they brought this to their attention? Why, they refused to let the Geyers or anybody else see their database. You would think that they would be concerned, that they would be thankful for pointing out what had happened, but apparently they didn't want this information out. But hepatitis B is very, very common in Asia. In China, there are some 700 million people who have had hepatitis B, and about 100 million still have active hepatitis B. It's a very, very low percentage here in the United States. How did they spread it over there? Well, I suspect it was by vaccination, using dirty needles. We just don't have the facilities for new clean needles. They cost a penny. We can't possibly do that. And so they use the needles over and over again, and 700 million Chinese have hepatitis B. The same thing with hepatitis C. There are 200 million people throughout the world who have hepatitis C. Most of them in the United States, of course, got it from IV drug use. But, of course, throughout the rest of the world, they just happened accidentally to use those needles over and over and over again. Hepatitis B vaccine, of course, has been given to all medical personnel. They found that of nurses, and you'll find these articles up on the Internet present time, look, type in at Google, hepatitis B vaccine, multiple sclerosis nurses. 3 times as common multiple sclerosis in nurses who've taken the hepatitis B vaccine than nurses that haven't. Now, there are other articles up there that says it isn't true, but then wouldn't you expect that they would plant articles? Because how could they let the American people really understand what's really going on in the world today? Hepatitis B has had more vaccine has had more complications than any other vaccine that has ever been used. And of course, it's because of something called molecular mimicking. The gene, this is not a live vaccine, is a genetic vaccine. They extracted a gene from the hepatitis B virus, and the gene that they extracted just happens to look to the body exactly like the gene that you find in the myelin lining of the nerves of your body. And so people, of course, take the vaccine and develop an autoimmune response to their own myelin sheath. And this is why, of course, you get the destruction of the spinal cord and peripheral neuritis. They know that. They just don't want the American people to know that. And they're still insisting on giving the hepatitis B vaccine to our children, not sometimes in the nursery. I guess they've still gone back to it in the nursery. Supposedly they've taken the thimerosal out. Let me tell you, if you have a child, do not let them give them a hepatitis B vaccine. There's absolutely no reason to do it unless, of course, the mother has hepatitis B, and then that would be a reasonable thing to do. All you have to do is test the mother and see. So why are they doing it? Well, you'll have to decide why they're doing it. It costs about $80 for the shots. And, of course, they're selling them here for $80. They're selling them in China for $1 each or less. Are we subsidizing the rest of the world? Are we potentially harming our children? Would there be anybody that evil that would want to harm the mind or the bodies of our children? Cell phones. Of course, we all hear about cell phones. Actually, the cell phone companies hired a scientist to look and see if there was any danger. After going over this several years, he found that it did damage to the brain. It produced brain cancers. Most recently, it's been found to produce auditory neuromas. Of course, there are new studies that say, oh, no, it's not true, it's not true. But the man who was employed by the phone companies, cell phone companies, was fired because he came out with the truth. And he's still trying to get that information out across America. But when was the last time you heard Rush Limbaugh or Bill Hannity, Sean Hannity, or any of the other Bill O'Reilly, talk about that? I mean, aren't they the conservative watchdogs protecting us from those wicked liberals? Then we have a new disease. It's called chronic fatigue syndrome. 1 million Americans have this. This disease did not exist when I went to medical school. It exists today. And, of course, the symptoms are very, very similar to the Gulf War syndrome. A cognitive disability, you can't think. You have constant diarrhea. You have excruciating pain, you have headaches, you have aches and pains, you have chronic fatigue, These people are totally disabled, almost 1 million people. And of course, they've even got organizations that for this, and the government's done everything they could to block efforts to find out what the cause of it is. And there's a wonderful book. I'd suggest you try to get a copy of it. In fact, we may even still have some copies. It's called Oster's Web. Do we still have any? We still have copies, a couple of copies of Oster's Web. And read the book. It's the story of the chronic fatigue syndrome. And you will realize that there's been an organized, orchestrated effort on the part of high government officials to block any efforts to find out what the true cause of this or the treatment for it is. And then there's an increase in cancer across America. Why are so many people dying of cancer? I mean, you look back 20 years, I didn't remember many people dying of cancer. As a physician, sure, people died of cancer, but nothing like there is today. I mean, the incidence of breast carcinoma has simply exploded in America. Why is it exploding? Do you realize that 1 in 3 in lesbians gets breast carcinoma? This is a well-known scientific fact, but they never put that out. Why? Because they don't want to discourage lesbianism. Why don't they want to discourage lesbianism? Because most lesbians don't have any children. Why do they want to encourage homosexuality? Because most homosexuals, until recently, couldn't have any children. There are many, many foods that will predispose you to cancer. And if you have not yet read a wonderful book by Dr. Russell Blaylock, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, I suggest you get it. We have copies over here. Now, if we can get them for you. He points out that milk and milk products will double your incidence of prostatic cancer. Eating certain fruits and vegetables will diminish significantly your chances of getting cancer. We know that fluoride increases your chance of getting cancer. Mercury increases your chance of getting cancer. Aspartame and NutraSweet increases your chance of getting cancer. Pesticides and herbicides that are toxic increase your chance of getting cancer. And DDT, which was outlawed, actually protected against cancer. Now, you may very well have heard that DDT was a terrible, terrible, dangerous product, and oh my goodness, the bird shells were thinning, and the birds were dying, and the fish were dying. Of course, it was all a lie. The bird shells were thin because of a scientific study where they took all the calcium out of the diet of the birds, and then they fed them DDT, and you never guess what happened. The eggshells were soft. And then when they put the calcium back in, why, the eggshells were normally hard, maybe even just a little harder, but when they went to Nature magazine, the fellow who had written the original article and said, I made a mistake, I want to correct it, the editor of Nature magazine said, I won't publish your article. I will not publish anything that's favorable to DDT. DDT had saved something like, it's estimated, 500 million lives over a 20 or 30 year period. But of course, it was outlawed. It was outlawed, if you read the writings of Alexander King of the Club of Rome, it was outlawed very specifically because it was saving lives. So 300 million cases of malaria every year now, chronic disability, terrible disease, and of course, the organism's becoming resistant to drugs. And of course, there are 3 million deaths from malaria, totally unnecessary in the world today, because we have outlawed DDT. Why would we have done that? Long-term planning. Now we have return of dengue fever spreading into the United States, Drake bone fever. We almost never used to see it. We see West Nile virus. And so what are they doing this spring with very, very toxic things that are carcinogenic rather than DDT, which is very, very safe. And any of you would like to get more information on DDT, we'll have it out in the syllabus we're putting out. Depleted uranium. I wonder how many of you know what depleted uranium is. Depleted uranium is solid uranium. It is not depleted at all. It is 100% uranium. They've simply taken the more radioactive part of the uranium out. That's uranium-235, or most of it. They're probably 15 to 20% there. It is solid uranium-238. They put it onto bullets. They put it onto shells. They put it onto bombs. And they're contaminating radiologically all of the Middle East today. And people are dying because of the marked increase, the incidence of cancers in southern Iraq, which was used during the first Gulf War. And, of course, our boys are coming home. You realize we have 30,000 casualties from the war in Iraq and Afghanistan so far. Now, we talk about there's about 1,100 boys have been killed in Iraq. And then, of course, we have about 6,000 or 7,000 who've been seriously wounded. But we have 30,000 casualties. And what sort of things do these people have? Why, they have mental problems. They can't think. They have persistent diarrhea. They have excruciating pain in their joints and headaches. They have chronic fatigue. Exactly the same symptoms as the first Gulf War illness. Exactly the same symptoms as chronic fatigue. But depleted uranium, many people believe, we're waging a nuclear war throughout the Middle East today. And if you, we will be, actually we have a 4-tape set on depleted uranium, not here, but this will be available in the next few days. Of course, you remember when they put MTBE into our gasoline here in California? Because we wanted, of course, to cut down on emissions, contamination of the atmosphere, and what we did is we increased contamination of the atmosphere. MTBE was a carcinogen. It was in our gasoline for some time, and now it's been taken out because it was a carcinogen, terribly irritating. Why did they put that in? Well, didn't they do any scientific studies beforehand? Did they have no idea what they were doing, or did they know, and did they have a different agenda? They're fluoridating the water throughout California today by new edict that Governor Schwarzenegger signed the bill. Of course, they're not simply putting in fluoride. They're putting in something they get out of the smokestacks of the places where they make aluminum and where they make fertilizer, where they make steel, and the nuclear industry itself. What they're putting in, much of it, it contains arsenic and lead and cadmium and polonium, which is a radioactive lead. It's in your drinking water. You can thank, of course, the public health authorities who want to protect the children's teeth. So we have genetically modified food. Now, people say, oh, well, genetically modified food. I mean, after all, I mean, we have different types of corn. We have different types of wheat. What's wrong with genetically modified? And you must understand what they are doing when they genetically modify this. They are actually changing the genetic structure, and they're taking many times a molecule or a gene from a fish, and they're putting it into wheat or corn. We have a book called Seeds of Deception. I suggest you read it. The scientific study showed that when it was fed to animals, almost half of them became extremely ill, and many of them died. But, of course, the animals, the mice, live a very short period of time. What's going to happen 20 years down the line to the people who are eating genetically modified food? The government assures us it's perfectly safe. You can trust us. We're from the government. We wouldn't feed you something that wasn't safe or would be. And then, of course, we have genetically created diseases. The Special Cancer Virus Project, the CIA project, we've already talked about. You hear a lot about Lyme disease. Where did it come from? A place called Lyme, Connecticut. What's close to Lyme, Connecticut? Plum Island, right across the inlet. That's a government biowarfare unit. And the first cases of Lyme disease occurred right close to that. And, of course, if you get in the background of all the new diseases, where did Ebola fever come from? Probably you've heard of Marburg disease, one of the first outbreaks of this hemorrhagic new disease. It occurred in a place called Marburg, Germany. And, of course, it occurred in Marburg and several other laboratories. It occurred in laboratory animals. It didn't occur in animals from the wild. It occurred in laboratory animals that were sent to Marburg that were going to be used to produce poliovirus. Well, fortunately, the animals died before they could make poliovirus and contaminate all of Europe. Well, why did they occur only in laboratory animals? And why are there all different types of Ebola disease? Because there's not just one, there are a number of different types of Ebola disease. Where did it come from? Where did chronic fatigue disease come from? Where did Lyme disease come from? Where did the new flu viruses, Bill was talking about, this new type of virus that they have over in Asia, just happens to be the same makeup as the Spanish flu that killed 20 million people back in 1918 that the government dug up and... But am I suggesting that they would be circulating that in Europe? I don't know. All I know is that there are evil and wicked people out there who would kill off a majority of the world's population. Now, certainly we have something called the Gulf War illness. Of the 695,000 American boys who went into the first Gulf War to fight for freedom, that we had, of course, to bring democracy to Kuwait, restore democracy there. But the trouble was that Kuwait had never been a democracy. It's always been a brutal Islamic dictatorship. And so, of course, well, of those 695,000, the government will admit 200,000 were ill. Joyce Riley places 400,000. We don't know exactly how many, but an awful lot of them are ill. Over 10,000 have died. Young, healthy men don't die. But these people are dying, and they're dying of cancers, they're dying of all sorts of terrible diseases. Their immune system is compromised, and the great tragedy is it's only recently, within the last 2 weeks, after the government has consistently lied and said there is no such disease. I did a professor in Southern California, works for the Veterans Administration, released a 150-page report that says there really is a Gulf War syndrome. Now, this woman will probably be fired by the Veterans Administration, but she is a professor at the University of San Diego, and I hope that we will be able to get her on one of our programs in the near future. But after 10 years of denying that the Gulf War illness was real, it turned out to be real. It's sort of like they told us over and over again that none of our boys who were in the first Gulf War came in contact with poison gas. There was no poison gas. General Schwarzkopf testified under oath there was no poison gas. And Colin Powell said there was no poison gas. And then as time went by, 6 months went by, a year, well, 5,000 were exposed. Well, maybe 10,000 were exposed. Maybe 50,000 were exposed. Maybe 100 to 150,000 were exposed. Well, it was a mistake. We blew up this bunker, and it wasn't Saddam Hussein. It was the bunker we blew up. It was full of poison gas. We had no idea what was going to happen. We just blew it up and exposed 100 to 150,000 American troops to poison gas. Terrible mistake, but nobody's been held responsible. Most of you have mercury fillings in your mouth today. Of course, if you have not yet seen the video we have on informed consent with a smoking tooth, that's not the smoking truth, it's the smoking tooth. You'll want to see it. We have a 4-tape set, interviews with Dr. Boyd Haley, a professor of chemistry, chairman of the Department of Chemistry at the University of Kentucky, talking about the relationship between Alzheimer's disease and your fillings. Of course, going into, of course, the relationship between the thimerosal and the vaccines. And incidentally, for those of you who don't know, you're seeing one of the greatest propaganda schemes of all time being played out in the media today. Do you realize that there may be a new flu vaccine, a new influenza vaccine? It could be like it was back in 1918 when 20 million people died and everybody's got to be vaccinated. You've got to be vaccinated. And Bill was pointing out earlier in his talk, you know, this is all symbolism over substance. It is simply an effort to panic people into taking these shots. Now, what's wrong with taking the shots? Well, some people will get Guillain-Barré disease and need to be permanently paralyzed or die from it. But the most frightening thing, and Bill quoted the work of Dr. Fudenberg, and if you take the handout that I gave you, I took the article from Dr. Fudenberg's website. Dr. Fudenberg is probably the most eminent vaccinologist in America today, with over 850 peer-reviewed articles. And he has posted this, the article that will be printed hopefully in the next 3 to 4 weeks, at least 3 to 4 months. And he has found that if you take an influenza shot, you're between 60 and 65, take 3 to 4 shots over a 5-year period, why your incidence of Alzheimer's disease will go up 1,000%. Your incidence of Alzheimer's disease will go up 1,000%. Now, why would they be telling us to do this to older people? It's even more frightening. Why would they be suggesting we give this toxic doses of not only mercury, but aluminum, the other things that are in that vaccine, to 6-month-old children? I would ask you, why do you think it is? Could it be that there is today a technique, a science of murder, complete with scientific laboratories and meetings and progress charts? Could we very well be seeing the same sort of evil in America today that existed in Hitler's Germany? MSG. MSG, of course, has a glutamate in it. It's an excitotoxin. It's in most of your prepared foods. It enhances the taste by destroying your brain. And MSG is associated with lesions in the brain. It's well known to do this, but of course they're using it anyway. And of course then we can get on into some of the proprietary drugs, and Bill, I think, has still covered these very well. Prozac, we've already talked about Prozac. What's the active ingredient? It's a fluorine compound. We know that it produces suicidal tendencies in children, and the government did everything they could to stop this from being put onto the packages. And they were being told by their scientific analysts, you shouldn't be allowing this to be used in children because these children are getting suicidal ideas. And the FDA fought them for years. Finally, of course, they've had to admit that there was a problem. Ritalin, we have probably 6 to 8 million children on Ritalin. It shrinks, it attacks their pituitary, it attacks, they get to be smaller stature, their brains are smaller. It's an addicting substance. It's a class 3 drug. I mean, you have to have a license to prescribe Ritalin. You can't get this over the counter. Of course, we have the statin drugs. They work for poisoning your liver. And then we have Vioxx, and Bill covered this very well. And they've known for many years it increased the incidence of heart disease 3 times. And, of course, it increased the incidence of stroke, and yet they continued using it. Vaccines, and, of course, the initial one of the vaccines they used during the Second World War was the yellow fever vaccine. They gave it to our troops in the South Pacific, and 25,000 of them got yellow fever from the vaccine. The original polio vaccine, which was the salt vaccine, of course, they knew it was contaminated. They knew it was going to produce polio because they'd given it to monkeys and they died, and so they gave it to human beings, and lo and behold, a lot of people got polio and died. The woman who had actually reported this was a woman named Dr. Bernice Eddy, who worked for the NIH, and instead of rewarding her for warning them ahead of time, why, she was demoted, and she was sent over into a laboratory to study cancer viruses. And she was really humiliated for daring to suggest. The truth of the matter was that the polio vaccine, the salt vaccine, was an unsafe vaccine, at least the lot that came out from Qatar. So then, of course, they began putting out the Sabin vaccine. And Dr. Eddy, snuck into the laboratory where they were doing this, and she began looking in the microscope at where they were growing this. They were growing the vaccine in a culture of the kidney of the rhesus monkey. And she noticed that the cells were dying, and she hypothesized that there might be a cancer virus there. And she reported this to her superiors, and they immediately attacked her and told her she couldn't tell anybody about it. And she went to a scientific meeting and reported there was a cancer virus that was actually in the polio vaccine, the salt. This is the Sabin vaccine that was being given all throughout the world today. And somebody who worked for Merck actually identified this as they came to be known as SV40, simian virus 40, the 40th vaccine that they, a virus they found, monkey virus. In fact, what they were doing was contaminating all of us with monkey viruses. We got all the monkey's viruses. Doesn't it make you feel good? We got it in the Sabin vaccine that we all got. And this virus produces cancer, produces mesothelioma, produces 3 or 4 other cancers, all of which are on the rise across America today. But of course, you can't admit that. They can't admit that to the American people, so they persist in lying, because after all, if they were to admit that, we wouldn't trust them anymore. There's a book over there, it's a red book, it's called The Virus and the Vaccine. You need to get it, you need to read it, it's a story of SV40 and the cover-up. So anyway, when they realized the terrible mistake they'd done, they said, well, we'll quit growing the Sabin vaccine in the rhesus monkey, we'll grow it in the green monkey. And that's what they did, because the green monkey doesn't have simian virus 40. It has all sorts of cytomegalic viruses. So we all got contaminated then with the cytomegalic viruses that produce all sorts of bizarre disease in human beings as well. They put contraceptives into the vaccines, and I've talked to doctors from both Philippines and from Kenya, and they would come in, the World Health Organization, financed with your tax dollars, and say, we, of course, want to help women of childbearing age from 15 to 40, and you're going to get free tetanus immunization because we wouldn't want you to get tetanus, or we wouldn't want your child to get tetanus when it's born. We're here to protect your children. We're from the World Health Organization. We want to help you. Well, what they didn't tell them was that there were chorionatotropins in there which sensitized the women so that they could not conceive or carry a pregnancy. And all these women, of course, were having miscarriages, and eventually some of the people there, some of the doctors, got this tested. They found out what was in it, and they realized, and of course, the government, oh, how did that happen? Terrible mistake. We wouldn't do a thing like that intentionally. Well, they just canceled. They canceled those. Both the government of Kenya and the government of the Philippines canceled the free vaccines, because believe me, when the World Health Organization comes in with a free program to protect you from disease, why, you want to be very, very cautious. And then, of course, there are all sorts of new diseases that are springing up. Childhood asthma, and I mentioned, of course, earlier, that the incidence of asthma in children that come from south of the border dramatically increases when they come to America. They're going to tell you it's air pollution. We've got the cleanest air in the whole world here. So, what you do is when you give all these vaccines, why, you begin to sensitize the immune system. And of course, we not only get asthma, we get autoimmune diseases of all various sorts, we get autism. The incidence of juvenile diabetes has skyrocketed in the United States, associated with all the vaccines we're given. And of course, I have talked personally to a Dr. Ken Alibak, who is the number two man in the Russian biological warfare unit. He told me that he had to be immunized against all these various diseases that he was working with. 50 different diseases they were developing to be used against the American people. So we took vaccines to all of them, and he said, you can't vaccinate people against all these diseases, you'll kill them. He said, I am so sensitive, I'm allergic to food, I'm allergic to almost everything I come in contact with. And, of course, his solution was to try to build up our immune system. Bill has already talked about how the fact that veterinarians are saying, hey, we're immunizing the animals too much. The cats and dogs shouldn't be immunized so much, but don't you worry. We're developing 100 new vaccines for you and your children here in America. Let me quickly go to
1,000
new vaccines. I stand corrected. All right, I guess I'm too conservative, Bill. Anyway, let me take you quickly through a mnemonic, because a mnemonic sometimes will help you. Let's talk about aspartame. First of all, aspartame is made up of three things: methanol, which of course is what produces blindness, aspartic acid, and phenylalanine. These are all poisons. Aspartic acid, of course, produces brain lesions. This was known back in the early 1970s. Methanol produces blindness. Phenylalanine is what you see certain in the brain, and in high doses it produces trauma. We have a number of excellent books, and they should be listed on your handout. Dr. Roberts' book, Aspartame Disease and Ignoring the Epidemic, Dr. Blaylock, Excitotoxins, The Taste of Chills, our 4 tapes set on aspartame, and the video, Sweet Misery. Now, what is the mnemonic? A, adipose tissue. You hear, how many times have you heard about there's an obesity epidemic in America today? Do you know that if you drink Diet Coke, why, you're going to get fat? Why? Because the aspartic acid, they knew this back in the 70s. If you fed rats aspartame, why, they got fat. And then, of course, they dissected them. They found it produced lesions in the brain. So you get obesity, and it doesn't matter if you cut back on your diet, why, you can't get the weight off. So it produces a lesion in the hypothalamus that predisposes to obesity. But nobody seems to know that in America today. And the more diet drinks you drink, the fatter you're going to get. Then, of course, S. A for adipose, S for sugar diabetes. Aspartame will create diabetes, it will complicate diabetes, it will produce juvenile diabetes, and will lead to diabetic blindness. So this is all covered in Dr. Roberts' book. P, pregnancy. It will actually prevent you from getting pregnant if you're a woman. The last thing you want to do is take it, and it will also lower testosterone levels. That's how you begin to sterilize the male. We have the articles that show it lowers the testosterone level. How many men today are having sexual dysfunction? And now we have a new solution. We call it Viagra, or... No, seriously. I mean, we have actually created a very, very real problem with our men, and we've done this intentionally, and they know exactly what they're doing. I asked earlier, how would they ever get to sterilize the men in our population? Well, we're going to give them products that will lower the testosterone level. And then, of course, A would be precocious adolescence. Our young girls are certainly going through menarche much younger than they used to. I mean, it used to be 13, now it's down sometimes 11, 10, 9. Why? Because aspartame has an effect on the endocrine system. T, tumors, produces, and this is known to produce tumors, testicular, uterine, mammary, ovarian, thyroid, pancreatic, and brain. And they have all sorts of studies to show in animals that produces this. There are laws that say you can't produce any, can't give anything to people that produces tumors in animals. But they're doing it anyway. And you're not hearing about it. A, well, that's for ALS, that's like Lou Gehrig's disease, anterior lateral sclerosis, or multiple sclerosis, really. There's been a definite tie-in to people with MS-like diseases and aspartame, NutraSweet. Parkinson's disease and other neurodegenerative diseases. M, for memory loss. And people who drink a lot of this get memory loss. Pilots and fighter pilots and airline pilots are told, do not drink Diet Cokes before you fly. Why? Because it affects your brain. But they're not telling you that. And then, of course, E for attacks the endocrine system. So that's aspartame. Then we go to fluoride. What does fluoride do? Well, F for fertility, it lowers fertility. There are all sorts of studies to show the impact on fertility. Frenny's paper, which we'll have in the new syllabus, shows definitely that you fluoridate the water, the fertility goes down. You take the fluoride out of the water, the fertility goes up. It also lowers the testosterone level. So they're hitting us with the aspartame, they're hitting us with the fluoride. They know these things. They just don't want you to know. But you need the scientific papers, and we have them. Then U comes from undifferentiated cells, cancers. And of course, Dr. Burke, who I had the opportunity of talking to before he passed away, he was the chief of research at the NI, at the National Cancer Institute, for many years. He and another doctor actually analyzed the cancer rates in cities that were fluoridated and unfluoridated, significantly higher in fluoridated cities, cancer rates in unfluoridated areas, 50 to 100% increase in the incidence of osteogenic sarcoma, many studies, and then they'll always come out with another study saying it isn't true. Why? Because they don't want you to know the truth. And you look at how these studies are, they're usually financed by people who are related to the people who are selling the fluoride to the cities. Then, of course, osseous damage. Well, we know that you almost will double the incidence of hip fractures and cartilage fractures and bone fractures in people, older people, in fluoridated areas. There are 8 different studies that show the relationship between hip fractures and fluoridated areas, but then if you want to get rid of the older people, you fluoridate the water. R for thyroid depression. Actually, how many people have hypothyroidism today? It's almost epidemic. Never used to be. I for infirmity. In the areas where they fluoridate the water and there are large amounts of fluoride in the water, why that people age prematurely, they become disabled, and they die much earlier. And the studies are there, specifically in areas in Afghanistan and China, with high fluoride areas. If you want to die quickly, you move into those areas. D for dental fluorosis. E for endocrine dysfunction, attacks your thyroid, attacks your testosterone level. And then let's get over into mercury. Of course, mercury is the most toxic substance in the brain we know of today. So what are they doing? They're putting in the fillings in our mouth. They're putting it in the various vaccines, and today they're trying to stampede the American people to give adult doses of the influenza vaccine to their children 6 months old. I mean, it's criminal activity. And we know what it does to the people over 65. If Dr. Fudenberg's work, what does it do to the brain of the infant? Well, there are evil people in the world today, ladies and gentlemen. When you understand that, everything makes sense. It creates endocrine dysfunction, it decreases pregnancy. In dental technicians, dental technicians who work with mercury have a much higher incidence of miscarriages. It produces autoimmune disease, that's R for rheumatoid-like diseases. It's probably related to Parkinson's disease and spinal cord disease, and probably related to cancers. So if you look at aspartame and fluoride and mercury, they attack the mind, they lower the testosterone level, and they decrease fertility. Aspartame and fluoride promote cancer, and mercury probably promotes cancer. Abraham Lincoln, addressing the Lyceum in Springfield, Illinois, said this: at what point should we expect the approach of danger? By what means should we fortify ourselves against it? Should we expect some transatlantic giant to step the ocean and crush us with a blow? Never. All the armies of Europe and Asia and Africa combined could never by force take a drink from the Ohio or make a mark on the Blue Ridge. Not in the cloud of 1,000 years. Then at what point should we expect the approach of danger? And I answer, if it ever reaches in the spring up among us, it can never come from abroad. If destruction be our lot, then we ourselves must be its authors and its finishers. As a nation of free men, we shall live through all time or die by suicide. And as I said earlier, the media is control. Secondly, your lives and the lives of your children are in danger. Thirdly, someone behind us. Those of you who heard the, saw the film earlier today, didn't show it very well on the screen. That's a picture of Madame Blavatsky. She's a theosophist. She was a Luciferian. If you've read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you'll find her quotations talking about how Satan, Lucifer, are God. Her disciples included George Bernard Shaw, Margaret Sanger. Adolf Hitler kept a copy of her secret doctrine on his table every evening, and this is where he got the supernatural power that he used to control the people of Germany. His whole occult movement was built upon theosophy and the Sewell Society and these occult movements. Until we understand we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological battlefield, we really can't understand anything that is going on today. So let me conclude with one of my favorite quotations. Back of all that foes have plotted, back of all that saints have planned, behind the schemes of men and demons is a higher hidden hand. Warp and woof our heaven created, every pattern good and wise, oft confusing by in earthly standards, but good and wise in heavenly eyes. Though the cause of evil prospers, yet his truth alone is strong, though our portion be the scaffold and upon the throne be wrong. But that scaffold sways the future, for in the dim unknown standeth God within the shadows, keeping watch above his own. With that, thank you so much. Appreciate it. God bless you all.